With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, it was a great weekend in the Premier League yet again. Nah, seriously though, Everton are in real trouble. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Monday the 4th of April. I'm Jules Free.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Welcome along, everyone. Happy Monday. Hope you all had a lovely weekend. It is Luke, Jim and Frank Lampard's best impersonator, Jules Breach, here with you today.
Did I do all right there? Yeah, I think the way that you got into the method beforehand to really focus and wouldn't let anyone talk to you so he'd get it right, really paid off.
A lot of frowning beforehand. Got to work on those lines. Yeah. Got to look like you've seen four terrible things in your life. Yeah. The Gordon Ramsay method.
Or just watch an Everton game.
Well, yeah.
We will come on to Everton because that was certainly one of the results of the weekend, them losing yet again, but there were some cracking results and some really high-scoring matches. So I think there's only one place to start. The absolute bonkers West London derby. How many West London derbies are there now? Quite a few. Yeah. But the West London derby between Chelsea and Brentford, where Brentford won 4-1 at Stamford Bridge. What a result for the Bees.
Yeah, and the big takeaway for me was Thomas Tuchel saying in the post-match interview, we stopped defending and I don't know why. Yeah. And it's like, well, you should know why. Mm. That's not a great advert for you in your role, is it? I don't really know. You know, if someone's come to me, so that Football Ramble episode you did the other day is really bad. What was bad about it? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I think he's a busy man though, isn't he? That's him just starting his to-do list.
Yeah, probably.
He's
just
multitasking, well, essentially.
Brassel called the Tuchel thing very, very early on.
What did he say?
He said that they'll have a meltdown at some point. They'll all fall out of love with him. It'll all go wrong.
Andy Brassel always right?
Well,
he's a genius.
Some would say there's other things going on at the club, which of course there is. And this is just a one-off result, right? I mean, we're not realistically saying that this is significant of anything bigger, are we? It's just one of those games in the Barclays, wasn't it?
It might be. I think there's a lot of stuff, lot of other stuff going on, as you've alluded to, which is, you know, must translate to the players and to the staff. However much they try and keep it out of their minds. Also, we're coming back off an international break that's felt like the longest international break that wasn't
an actual tournament. Has it felt like long?
I think it has.
Because we were talking on Friday about, you know, some teams are going to struggle to get back up to speed, and we wondered who it was, and clearly it was Chelsea. So I think you're right, it's probably an anomaly. It'd be far more interesting if it wasn't, and Chelsea start dropping points all over the shop now. I might be quite biased in wanting that to happen, but still. You look at a result like this, and you assume someone's been sent off. You know what I mean? Or some mad thing has happened. But the mad thing that happened was Christian Eriksen, I suppose.
Yeah.
Let's not make any excuses. Brentford were bloody brilliant.
They were
amazing. It was so good to watch. Because even first half, when it was 0-0, going in at half time, Brentford were the way better side and they deserve to actually be in front in that first half. And so then when you come out early second half and Rudiger scores an absolute
that's a brilliant
rocket.
Goal, yeah.
Brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant. And Brentford's response to that was really impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think that they go straight off the back of Rudiger scoring, they score themselves and they score two more. They score three in 10 minutes, basically. Yeah.
I think Rudiger's legs are too long for his body.
They do look very long.
And when he hit that shot and it looked almost alien-esque. Did not look quite right.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
He's just a funny looking footballer, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, I think he's
very
got,
gangly.
But I think he's got, from torso, so from waist up, he's got like the physique I would want.
Oh,
like,
really?
Right, middleweight boxer type physique. Very slim, but obviously very tough. The legs are big. The legs are a problem.
I don't know, though.
Or are they not? They're not a problem for a football player.
It can be an advantage. Best. Look at Patrick Vieira.
Yeah, he was very long-legged.
An utterly unique body type, really. And it was a huge advantage to him. So Patrick Rudiger might have the same sort of advantage. He's got a longer reach, hasn't he, for tackling and that, which is important for defenders, I believe.
Patrick Vieira could do that move he always used to do, where he's a long leg out to block or scoop the ball around. And every single one of those moves now would be subsequently ruled out by VAR.
Yes, every single one. Yeah.
4-1, though. What a result for Brentford. Incredible. I mean, they're pretty much guaranteed their safety in the Premier League. Not mathematically, but, you know, they're there, aren't they? I think there's definitely three teams that are worse. And that was just, I mean, what a result for them to get. And a performance as well. And the goals, too. I mean, I thought Mbeumo had one of the best games of the season for him. I know he didn't even score, but despite that, he was just involved in absolutely everything. I thought he was brilliant.
They could have scored more. I mean, there was a very early mistake by Mendy that should have been punished.
Oh, yeah, that Tony one when he went
chance.
Over.
Yeah. I mean, Tony had three decent chances in the first half alone before Rudiger scored, didn't he?
Yeah,
so, I mean, yeah, they really were fantastic. And it's great to see because at the start of the season, they played a lot more like this, didn't they? And they retreated into themselves a bit in the middle part of the season. And when they came to the Emirates, they offered nothing, really. And I picked that game out because I was there and you obviously get a better idea of how teams set up when you see them live.
And also in comparison to the opening game of the season where they beat Arsenal.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, it's really, really good that they seem to have found this confidence again where they will go to Stamford Bridge and go, you know what, we're just going to try and win this. We're going to go for it.
How much of that do you think is down to Eriksen?
How much
of a lift has he given them, Luke?
He's given them a lift at the right time. But the thing is with Brentford, from the start of the season through to about the middle of October, really, you were thinking they'd be fine in this division. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's easy to say that on the open, because the opening day they had such an amazing night. Was it a Friday night? They beat Arsenal at home. It was pumping in their new stadium, all the rest of it. But actually, if you go through to kind of the middle of October, they get a very creditable draw against Liverpool 3, or they smashed Oldham in the League Cup. Beat them 7-0 or something. And they always looked like they would be good enough to stay in the division. They had that really tricky period from the new year through to about a month ago where they just couldn't get a win from anywhere. But they've always, I mean, so Eriksen coming in gives them a boost at the right time maybe, but they've always had enough quality to stay in the division. Now, I don't think there's ever been any question about that. I like the fearless nature they approached the game at Stamford Bridge, because it's interesting with teams like Brentford around this start of this time of the season, you'll see teams who'll go, this is fine now, we're done.
Yeah,
the Premier League.
We're all right
we're fine. Mm. Or you go, this is a chance for us to really kind of make a name for ourselves, get a couple of showpiece and results for the fans to remember, really fighting for our place still, all the rest of it. And that's obviously what Brentford have done. I found, speaking of what Tuchel said earlier, I think another thing he said, which is strange, he said, we were wearing gloves and it was snowing during training yesterday, and then today it was very, very warm. It's like, as adults, you are used to having changes in weather. Yeah. I know that's probably a particularly extreme example, maybe, but I mean, I don't really know if that's going to cut the mustard with the fans that you got whooped for at home because it got a bit warm. Really?
Well, it's just, you know, he's been asked a question he doesn't have an answer to, is he? So he's just scrambling around thinking, it could be gloves. Maybe we lost because of gloves.
I've interviewed Thomas Tuchel quite a bit when I work on Champions League games, and I tend to cover Chelsea. I'm actually going to the game on Wednesday against Real Madrid, which will hopefully be brilliant, and I'm anticipating we'll see a completely different performance from Chelsea on Wednesday. But I actually love interviewing him. I think he's actually quite entertaining. I always find his answers, he always kind of goes somewhere else with the answer. He always answers the question, but then also takes you somewhere
else.
Yeah.
That's what you want. Ideal for you.
Absolutely.
Intense focus from Tuchel is what you seem to get. I enjoy watching his interview.
To his credit, from what I remember, he doesn't seem to have used this uncertainty around the club as much of an excuse.
Oh, he's
either.
Been brilliant as well on that.
He'd rather
been really,
use
really
gloves.
Clear-headed.
Yeah. So you guys, thanks for all coming. You probably know what I'm thinking when it comes to why the result was poor today. And everyone's like, yeah, the ownership and that. No, gloves. It's actually to do with gloves.
It's really warm today in London. Yeah. Actually, to be fair, the weather looked absolutely beautiful. And there was such a contrast because obviously watching all the 3 o'clock games, because I was at work on Saturday, I get to see the different weather across the country.
Yeah.
And you've got London that was basking in sunshine and the Brentford fans having the time of their life in the away end at the Bridge. And then you looked at Turf Moor and you're like, oh, it's grey. It's grey in Burnley today.
Highlights,
and they're getting battered by Man City.
Highlights for us, those of us who watch BT Sport but actually know you as well, were watching you paint like a shit-eating grin on your face and be professional. When,
how are my acting skills?
When Neil Maupai missed that penalty. Those of us who know you know there are not enough swear words in the world that you'd want to use.
And you know what's the biggest wind-up as well is that Steve Sidwell, who's watching the game, goes, is he going to score it, Jules? And I was like, don't ask me that.
He's
question.
Turned you into Keegan. Yeah.
And you know what my response was? Hope so.
Kevin Keegan once did it live in a game and went, yes, oh, no, when it was missed. But you know,
basically me.
Graham Potter said, and we are going to do a bit of Brighton here.
Yeah. Well, it's not in the running order.
It doesn't
order.
Matter. Graham Potter said that the Brighton fans are putting off the players by telling them to shoot all the time.
You were doing that on BT Sports, or do you realise that?
What, I was saying shoot.
Every now and then, you just look down and go, and the score's coming in. Shoot! Go, shoot, Neil, shoot!
You could hear the producer saying, kill Jules' mic.
Yeah, she's saying shoot mic. Again.
Because you know that Brighton had quite a lot of shots in that game.
We did have quite a lot of shots. I was watching it.
31.
Yes.
31.
And how many
as
goals?
Many as 31.
How many goals did we score? None. Yeah. You are a horrible person. Let's continue talking about Chelsea-Brentford then. I'm going to move this swiftly on. I think the music choices from both teams were also quite amusing. Ivan Toney chose Dancing in the Moonlight as their first song in the dressing room.
That's a weird one.
Do you rate that?
I am shocked at the legacy of this song, because when it came out, it was a bit of a figure of fun, wasn't it?
Cover as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it was like
it was like the
benchmark for a shit song.
It's a cover.
Yeah. And everyone loves it now. You hear it all the time.
Is that harsh, Jim?
I do think it is. I'm not saying that's necessarily what I think. I'm fairly indifferent to it, but used it as a punchline quite a lot, and it's still here.
I just find it odd that Ivan Toney, right? He's quite cool. He's like in his mid-20s.
He was quite cool.
Yeah,
he was quite cool. He's absolutely
cool
torpedoed that.
He's
with
put
this.
That. Oh, that's his first choice. When all the lads are around, it's a weird one for me. Yeah. That
you can't not enjoy it when it's on, though, can't you? Can you?
Yeah, but I mean,
I feel like when that song comes on, like a turtleneck grows out of whatever you're wearing, and it just—it's a certain vibe that is not for a dressing room after smashing Chelsea.
Yeah, he's basically chosen a song which is the last song you hear when you turn the car off in the Waitrose car park. Yeah, and he's going, "Come on, lads." I find that odd.
It's the very last song of the night at a shit wedding, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I guess it probably is, yeah.
I actually should take that back, because it was actually one of my best friend's first dance songs.
A shit wedding, apparently. A
no,
shit wedding.
I enjoyed your wedding, mate.
One.
I enjoyed
Name
it.
Name them.
No! What I also did find amusing was the DJ at Stamford Bridge tried to, you know, just chill everyone out by playing a bit of Bob Marley at the end of that game. Lose 4-1 to Brentford. Let's put a bit of Three Little Birds on.
Let's all calm down.
Every little thing's going to be all right.
Everything's going to be fine, guys.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's only Brentford. We're all right. Although, some people are saying now that third place for Chelsea could be lost.
I think it's definitely up for grabs.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Definitely up for grabs. If you look at the situation, they're 5
Arsenal,
points
it's
clear?
Arsenal, really, isn't it? Arsenal and Spurs that are
chasing. Arsenal got a game in hand,
yeah.
So, I mean, it can't be too over the top. Chelsea have only lost one of their last six or so. So, I mean, we'll see what happens.
Mm.
But I think it's in play now.
Yeah.
It's got to be what everyone else is aiming. I say everyone else, what Arsenal and Spurs are aiming at, right?
Yeah,
definitely.
Sure.
Let's talk West Ham 2, Everton 1. Another brilliant result for David Moyes' men ahead of a big week in Europe for them, which I'm very excited about. But I think really the story with this one, Everton losing again, a sixth straight defeat for Everton and Frank Lampard. 3 red cards in 3 consecutive games for one of his players as well. It was just, I mean, I saw it coming, to be fair. I didn't think Everton would get a result at the London Stadium, but this is not looking good for old Frank.
Can I just correct you slightly? It was 3 red cards and 3 league games.
Let's
not forget the big game against Crystal Palace in the Cup, where they didn't have a person sent off, but they did, of course, lose 4-0.
Mm, typical cup tie.
Let's not kick them when they're down.
Yeah, Soslik, thanks for the
You don't need to kick them. You can just say what happens. Do you know what I mean? Just state the facts.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember when Newcastle were taken over? I was really worried about losing a banter club.
Yeah.
Nature will step in.
Nature finds a way.
Yeah.
I feel a bit...
It will correct itself.
You know what? I felt a bit sorry for Everton in this game.
Yeah.
You know why? Because they started quite well. And actually, I think their response when they went behind was also
It wasn't okay. It was no way the worst example of Frank Lampard's Everton. They were okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of questions to answer still, obviously. And clearly the problems at Everton go a lot deeper than Frank Lampard. And we've seen that with previous managers. I mean, there's an issue there. Clearly, there's probably several issues there. They're in big trouble. Like, I don't think it's overstating to say that they're in a lot of trouble. And yeah. I think Lampard's decisions are also compounding it. If you stick to just the football, because that's probably what we know best, because we don't really know the ins and outs of what's happening at them as a club. You've got a situation, like you say, three red cards in a row in the league. That's obviously not ideal. Michael Keane's decision-making, very, very poor for a player who's got international experience. You can't tell me that Mason Holgate can play in central midfield for Everton away from home.
Especially with
team.
Those socks. Hey. Yeah, well, holes all over the gaff.
That's because their calf muscles are so big, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
What?
It's to relieve the pressure on their calf muscles. Yeah.
Oh, I thought when he went down injured, the physio was cutting tape out, and that's why he had holes.
Some of them do cut holes in them.
Do they?
Yeah. I know he scored a goal, by the way.
Yeah, most Frank Lampard goal Everton have yet scored.
Yeah, what, a big deflect?
Heavily deflected from the end of the box.
Lampard's got enough problems without getting those kind of digs in still. That's what people used to say about him like 10 years ago.
Well, you know.
I heard
it's haunting playing him. In the image of their manager.
I heard that these three consecutive league red cards is actually equal to the amount Frank Lampard had in his entire career
as a
over
player.
600 wow. appearances, and they've done it in three league games.
So on top of that, They lead the league for mistakes leading to goals. I know all of that will be under Lampard.
So many mistakes.
But that's the problem, isn't it? Iwobi had I felt really sorry for him, actually. He made a bad one at the weekend. And obviously, that to me, it implies they're playing with some fear, right?
But is that what's going to happen? Joking aside, Jim, is that what's going to happen when you only pay 28 million for a footballer? They're going to make very basic errors.
I think we got 40 million. For
on target. I don't think he's reaching any targets.
Yeah, you're probably right, actually. Probably
it's
right.
A lot of money, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Jim, what about the idea that... I said earlier, Lampard compounding this issue with these things. Like, I think the day that Lampard took the job, they got Ali in on loan, right? And Lampard was waxing lyrical about Dele Alli, how great he was. Doesn't even use him off the bench.
No.
Uses one sub the whole game, which is to take off Calvert-Lewin, which I understand because he's having to come back from an injury. But he brings on a kind of wide midfield player. So they end up with a complete change of formation. I just thought it was very, very strange. Their squad seems to be all over the place.
I think part of what Everton needs to do, if they can stay up, is, and I think they will, they need to stop being essentially an early retirement home for players like Dele Alli, and to a degree, Donny van de Beek, who's obviously been a lot better than Alli. Like,
he was injured in the warm-up, to be fair, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. But yeah. they are seen as a club
is
where you
harsh
can rehabilitate. No, I don't think so.
He's still young.
He is, well, yeah, but I mean, he's not getting in the team, is he?
He needs to go elsewhere. Like, he's not going to...
A lot of people in Liverpool do consider Liverpool to be abroad.
I just think he almost needs a completely fresh start, away from the UK media, away from, the spotlight, and just go somewhere and get his head down and get fit and just kind of just get back to enjoying football, because he doesn't look like he's enjoying it.
I diverge from Jim slightly. I don't know if they will get out of this. I think a lot depends on that game midweek against Burnley away. That is absolutely gigantic.
Which now Michael Keane misses because
suspended.
Of that red card.
Ridiculous.
Like, it's just...
I don't think Yerry Mina's back for a wee while either. And they've also got to play Watford away. Now if you look at those two teams, realistically, right, for Everton to go down, a couple of things need to happen, right? So in this case, it's essentially going to be one of Watford or Burnley to find a bit of form.
Yeah.
Burnley traditionally, I know they haven't shown much recently, but they're traditionally much better in the second half of the season. And you have to think at some point that they will kind of get it together under Dyche. Now, I said from the very start of the season, I thought it might be a bit different for them this season. I think they might go down. Mm. Watford under Roy Hodgson. This is around the time when a Roy Hodgson team starts clicking. Everything's so formulaic. Everything's done time and time again. It takes a while for his ideas to kick in, but he's very regimented. And they've got some games coming up, like Leeds at home, Brentford at home, where they might actually start to build a bit of a momentum themselves. If either of those teams do that, I genuinely think Everton are in massive, massive trouble. And I think even more than that, given what's happening with the new stadium, given the amount of money they're losing, you are looking. I heard a guy, an Everton fan media kind of guy, who was really, really articulate. I can't remember his name, sadly. But anyway, he was saying, look, we make no bones about it. If we get relegated this season, we are the new Sunderland. We have lost so much money and so much has gone wrong at the club that they could be the new Sunderland. So the stakes are really high for Everton. That game midweek against Burnley is a massive six-pointer.
It's absolutely huge. There's only 4 points between Burnley and Everton now, and they've now both played the same amount of games as well. So they're equal in that sense. They do have two games in hand on Watford, who are sandwiched in between the two of them in terms of the table. But yeah, it is certainly worrying times. As for the West Ham perspective on this, David Moyes just is he's loving it. He's having a great season, isn't he? And he described that win as just a starter. We've now got a main course coming up.
Disrespectful to Frank again. Yeah.
And also, they're playing Brentford after that. So are they dessert?
Bees, honey for dessert.
Yeah. I prefer it to every game being a cup final, to be honest.
Yeah, people say
the rest of the season is a 10-course taster menu.
Yeah, Aaron Creswell with the best shithousery of the weekend as well.
That was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. So good. Was
just
it?
Boot the ball into his face.
Two things in one game. Yeah, the thing I'm referring to, Jim, is after he scores that beautiful free kick, which just was, you couldn't pick a better spot. It was absolutely stunning. He then goes over to the Everton fans and cups his ears at them, obviously, because he's from Liverpool and I think a born bred Liverpool fan. So,
I didn't realise that.
Nice
I thought it was
bit
just because
shithousery that.
I thought it's just because players sometimes do that where they go to celebrate and they don't know which fans it is.
Yeah, he's a Liverpool fan, so that was lovely. And then he obviously kicked the ball at Richarlison's face.
Tried just right into his head.
Tried to kill Richarlison.
Mad. Yeah, absolutely mad. I was actually surprised. I mean, perhaps, you know, referring to that, mistakenly thinking you were referring to that as shithousery is underplaying quite how mad that was, because
it was a bit naughty.
I'm surprised
actually.
You didn't
it
get sent
naughty.
Off. Actually,
yeah, he was quite lucky, I think.
I also like the fact that, you know, as a testament to what David Moyes has been able to achieve at West Ham, the players all looked like they were really, really desperate to be starting against Lyon. It's such a big game for them, and you know, I mean, West Ham could have. I mean, they already arguably have had a really good European season, but it could get even better for them. And all the players looked like they really wanted to be. Not jeopardise playing against Lyon because they know it's such a big game for the club. So that was pretty good as well.
I was surprised that Jarrod Bowen started actually because obviously he's been injured for quite a while and I thought David Moyes might just not want to risk him in this game. But actually he had a brilliant game scoring again. And actually that goal that he scored, when we talk about things not going well for Everton, when they showed the VAR because they were checking to see if Mikel Antonio was onside when the ball was passed forward to him, it actually looked like they were lining up Frank Lampard in his technical area to see if he actually gets Antonio onside. Wasn't quite that, but he was onside. And Jarrod Bowen, what a return for him as well, because you know they've been desperate and they have really missed him in these last few matches since he's been out. So a timely return for him as well, and a great player. I think outside of the top four, he's got the most goal involvements in the Premier League this season.
It's absolutely astonishing to me that he isn't in the England squad. I think he should be.
He probably would have been, do you think, if he wasn't injured?
He will be. I think he should have been called up ages ago.
Yeah.
He's always shown since he's moved to the Premier League how good he is and how much he can affect a game. It's just how positive he is. Mm-hmm. His numbers are great, but also he's just really positive as well. And so I would like to see him as part of the setup. And David Moyes actually said, I knew I had a chance to either give Bowen 60 minutes from the start or kind of half an hour at the end. So I went for the start and he obviously wanted to protect him ahead of this European game. But I mean, I think West Ham will get through against Lyon. I know Andy does as well, even though he's a Lyon fan.
Yeah, he does. And you know, I think that's actually the right decision from David Moyes, because are you ready for the biggest name drop I've ever done on this Football Ramble podcast? When I worked with Thierry Henry recently, we were talking...
Do you ever do like shadowing at work? Come along for a day.
You can if you want. He smells lovely.
Yeah, I bet he does.
Looks better in his tracksuit than he does in a suit, I think.
He just always looks good.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
How disappointed would you have been if he didn't smell very nice?
Very.
We've got a bit of a list in the office of the people that have come in who smell the nicest.
Have you? Am I at the top?
No.
You always smell nice.
Yeah, you had that nice fragrance earlier that we were all saying was nice. At the top of the list is ex-Love Island contestant Josh Denzel.
Oh, yeah, I've met him. He does smell good.
Smells great.
Yeah. Would you say
Henri smells nicer?
Yes.
Okay, carry on.
Yes, yes, yes. We were talking about injuries and returning from injury. I can't remember who we were referring to. It might have been, I can't remember. Anyway, I think it was a Real Madrid player that we were talking about. And he actually said that the worst thing you can do as a manager, if one of your players is injured, is actually bring them on late on in the game, because you want to actually have a full warm-up before you return from injury. Yeah. So rather than coming off the bench where you've sat there, and of course you do a little warm-up on the sideline, but it's not the same. He actually said it is so much better for a player that's returning from injury to actually start a game and come off early. So I thought that was quite fascinating. I'd never really thought about that before. Anyway.
I'm surprised you could concentrate on him.
Yeah.
I am.
Is that the only thing you can remember that you said?
For the entire 2 days I worked with him, yeah. Right, we are going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll focus on a couple of the other matches from the weekend, including a bit of a mare for Newcastle.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Obviously very disappointed with the performance today.
Absolute shit.
Fair enough.
Was that me after Brighton Norwich?
It's the Crawley, it's the Crawley Town manager.
Yes, gone again.
I'd love it if you said that on the show. That'd be funny.
Right, let's see how we got on in Betway's 4 to Score before we get to your emails. Remember, entry to Betway's 4 to Score is free. Each week, pick the first goal scorer in Betway's 4 selected matches for your chance to win the weekly 50 grand jackpot. And make sure your selections are submitted before the first match. Further terms and conditions do apply, so make sure you check them out. Our first game was Manchester United against Leicester, which was the late kickoff on Saturday UK time. We'll come on to that in a bit. Jim, you actually picked Harry Maguire as the first goal scorer.
Yeah, my thinking was that Leicester concede a lot from corners and he played for Leicester. He's under a lot of pressure. We quite often see players step up, but no.
Just to give you my take on that, Jim, I like that you've prioritised the banter over money for charity.
It was a serious guess.
Have you seen him play for Man United this season?
Do you know who did score, though? Lawrence Maguire, his brother.
Oh, really?
His brother scored the opening goal, so it would have
Can we have that?
He's scored
got a shared DNA.
Scored for Chesterfield. Chesterfield did end up actually losing the game, so it's not a great time for any of the Maguires right now. The result actually was Iheanacho, by the way. So unfortunate on that one, Jimbo. Game two was West Ham-Everton, and Andy Brassel picked Mikel Antonio. He's not right at everything, is he, actually?
No.
Because it was Aaron Creswell with that free kick. Spurs-Newcastle was our other choice of games. Pete picked Sonny. But it was actually Fabian Schär after Newcastle went on to lose the game, which we'll talk about in a moment. Our fourth match hasn't been played yet. It's Crystal Palace Arsenal, which is tonight, 8 o'clock. Kate has picked Jean-Philippe Mateta. We will find out later who the first goal scorer is, if there is one.
Best case scenario is 1 out of 4. Mm. And all of our eggs are in the Jean-Philippe Mateta basket.
Yes.
Mine aren't.
I think he scored last time out. I think he might have scored against Everton in the Cup.
Oh, did he?
So you never know. You never know. That'll be bragging rights for May conversation on the WhatsApp group.
Indeed. Right, we'll be back with another round of Four to Score on the preview show this Friday. Now it is time for this. You know if you got an email to show at
footballround.com, do it for Sven. I said you got an email to show at footballround.com. Yes. John has been in touch and he says, listening to Jules' glass-smashing escapades reminded me of my trip to London in 2010, all the way from sunny Seattle. My friend and I were spending time in London and we're looking forward to watching England take on Germany in the knockout stage of the World Cup. Oh, how naive. We set up shop in the nearest Wetherspoons to our hostel and had a few pints as we waited for the match to start. Things were relatively calm until Frank Lampard's clear goal was chalked off. At this point, the bar staff came around and poured everyone's drinks into plastic cups, taking the glass away. I can only think that Jules is not an outlier, but indicative of a wider culture. John, you could not be more bang on.
No, I think what actually happened there was that it was exact. You think it's because of Frank Lampard's goal being chalked off, but actually Jules walked into the pub at that exact moment. They're like, right, everyone decant.
She's barred, but decant anyway.
Decant protocol.
She may not leave.
You know what? I think it's a sensible choice. I think it is.
I just remember watching that game. We went, me and, were you there, Jim? We were at Paul Riley's house. Remember Paul Riley?
Yeah, I do. I don't think I was there, though.
And we walked, me and Marcus and Rupert Fry were walking back from his house because he lived in the middle of nowhere. Just going, oh, this is shit. So shit. Mm. It was just so disappointing.
It was so annoying.
Yeah, well, there you go. What are you going to do?
You know what, on the glass thing, by the way, I do get quite annoyed if I get served a drink in a plastic cup that should be served in glass. So, you know, you get like, say you get a glass of Prosecco or a glass of champagne.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes they give it to you in a plastic flute.
Yeah.
And I get annoyed. Now people are going to think I'm annoyed for a different reason. I can't smash it at the end.
You can smash it, can't you? But it's harder and it's not satisfying.
It's not definitely not as satisfying. I've never smashed plastic.
Ooh. It was pointed out to us on Twitter, actually, that rage rooms exist where you can just like
yes.
go into a room and just smash loads of things up. We should do that. We'd do a show in one.
Can we?
Yeah, it's just your living room.
Can you take me for my birthday? My 40th?
The worst. Well, we haven't got time to plan
years.
That. Saying, we've only got a couple of weeks to plan that.
Don't forget, you can get your emails into our show at footballramble.com or tweet us at footballramble. And on Wednesday, we'll have another pep talk. So if you've got any dilemmas, any questions you'd like to ask us for some advice on, then get your emails in for that as well. Show at footballramble.com. Right, back to the football from the weekend. What a game it was yesterday at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Spurs 5, Newcastle 1. And that was after Newcastle took the lead through Fabian Schär. I mean, it was an absolute riot in the second half from Tottenham, wasn't it?
It was.
It was like every time they attacked, they were going to just score again and again and again.
And then they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Spurs just, it wasn't even really that Newcastle fell apart, was it? It's just Spurs have got very, very good at turning the screw at home. And really using the crowd and the added crowd essentially has started to really, really work for them. And I think, you know, it's an obvious point, despite the fact he didn't score, but Harry Kane was just absolutely magnificent yesterday. I think he's added shades of David Beckham to his game, like aside from the dead balls, obviously. Because there's this weird thing where Kane doesn't really score free kicks, which is really quite strange. But just that, the kind of quarterback style passing that he's so good at is just absolutely on fire at the moment. The pass, the particular one to Son, was just absolutely unbelievable.
His passing range is unreal. And I think it's difficult for teams to know how to defend against that, because he goes in there and he fills in and they have an overload in the middle of the park. And if a defender doesn't go with him, he's got time to turn and pick out these amazing passes. But if a defender does go with him, because they've got players now, Spurs, that are really good at overloading and really good at getting beyond Kane. And I'm not just talking about Son and Kulusevski. I'm talking about Doherty and Royale in this game as well, both who scored. It's really difficult to defend against. However, I would say this. I would say that Newcastle seemed a bit shell-shocked by the amount of goals that were scored so quickly. So when Doherty, whose name I always say wrong apparently.
Doherty, whatever.
Score, and then Son scores. It felt to me that, okay, fair enough, you're 3-1 down, Newcastle, away from home. But they seemed to really kind of go for it, almost really kind of chase it. They could chase the game. And it was almost a bit like they thought to themselves, we're a good team now. We can actually get back in this. And they just got picked off. Mm. And it was easier for Spurs than it needed a bit to have been, I think. So that was a bit of an issue for them, particularly given that, you know, they seem to have lost quite a bit of momentum over these last three games now. I know there's been an international break in the middle, but I mean, you lose against Everton, you know, we talked about them. You lose to Chelsea, fair enough. But I mean, they've got a couple of home games coming up. They've got opportunities to kind of sort themselves out. They're going to stay in the Premier League anyway now, so maybe they just think that's job done. They'll build for next season. But I didn't think they needed to be as open and as chasing the game as they decided to be. I don't know why that happened when Howe is really quite a decent coach.
Yeah, but I think from a Spurs perspective, that they were right when they had the ascendancy in the game to just keep going. And I think because they have that quality on the pitch, they were able to actually put those opportunities away. I think Kulusevski has been... I mean, I don't know. Is he underrated? I think we do talk about him quite positively and we have been giving him a lot of praise, but he has made a massive difference to
really
that
has.
Front three. I think that Spurs front three now have started the last 9 games in a row together now, and they just look so dynamic moving
Very
forward.
Very complimentary to each other. Yeah.
And I think with Kulusevski, the thing that impresses me the most about watching him is that even when Tottenham were 3-1 up, when they lose the ball, he chases it down. And I'm talking about up at the attacking end of their pitch, when they're actually trying to attack. It's not like he's trying to win the ball back because he's lost it and he's trying to defend. Mm. He's actually constantly trying to make something happen. He's got this almost like endless energy that just never runs out. And he's always got, always picks out a decent pass or tries to create something. And I think that Tottenham were clearly missing that before, and they just seem to work really well together. Don't they?
I think, you know, Spurs have got a making of a really good side now. I mean, it looks like Doherty's been really reinvigorated. They've got a great base to their team. If you look at the record with, I think we spoke about this before, but with Dier and Højbjerg in the team, and you've got Bentancur, who looks top quality alongside him, and Romero looks a good player. And they've got this front three who can really kind of really... you know, rival, not anyone, but they're a really, really good, strong front three. And as you say, they're consistent and they complement each other. It's a basis of a really good side there. However, we've said that about Spurs quite a lot before, and something somehow always conspires to go wrong. They've got basically a straight fight, really, along, in my view, with Arsenal to get into that fourth spot. We'll see what happens. But I thought they were excellent yesterday, but I didn't think they needed to be that good. Newcastle seemed a little bit all over the place.
Emerson Royale looked genuinely shocked when he scored. It was lovely, wasn't it? He was like, what's just happened there? I've just scored. Yes, you have. Was that his first Spurs goal?
Believe so.
Yeah, I think it might have been, actually.
I liked that Dan Byrne did a number on someone. I can't remember who it was now. And then when the guy...
it was on Harry Kane, wasn't it?
Was it on Kane? Well, whoever it was, when they got up, the camera caught Dan Byrne blowing him a kiss. And I thought, that is old-fashioned centre-back play there.
Yeah. Oh, big Dan Byrne.
Yeah.
I miss him.
Did you? Well, not based on that before.
But still, we do miss him.
You're basically supporting a side who have 31 shots and can't score, and your answer seems to be Dan Byrne.
Shut up. Yeah. He actually scored a couple goals for us, including a goal against Manchester City.
And you'll take them all, won't you? You really take them all.
Absolutely will.
It always looks odd when someone that large scores. Yeah. Like, even Peter Crouch spent a whole career doing it, it still always looked weird somehow.
7 games, the last 7 matches in the Premier League for Brighton, we've had 1 goal scorer, and you know who it was? Lewis fucking Dunk, our defender.
Is that his full name?
No.
LFD.
That's what I call him, though. BDB, Big Dan Byrne.
Yeah.
Actually, Eddie Howe's reaction after the game I thought was interesting. He says, in hindsight, we might look back on this as a good thing, losing to Spurs. It might realign our thoughts and get us back to basics, which we think is a bit big Brucey energy there, don't we?
Yeah, I think there's something to it, though. As you said, Luke, it's like they
a wake-up call?
Yeah, they tried to sort of go, we're like a top four team now. We shouldn't be taking this from Spurs. And then they tried to play Spurs their own game and got absolutely dicked on. So like they probably want to remember not to do that.
If anyone actually worked in football as a player, a coach or whatever, listens to this show, their big ambition should not be to be compared to Steve Bruce. that should be our first and foremost.
Yeah, speaking of Steve Bruce, it wasn't a good day for him at the weekend either, because their local rivals, Birmingham, ended their 4-match unbeaten run by beating them 1-0. And reacting to the match, Steve Bruce said, "That has got to be the worst game of football that I've ever seen. It was lacking in quality on both sides." West Brom didn't have a single shot on target in the match. What, the worst game he's ever seen?
The worst game Steve Bruce has ever seen. Didn't he manage his 1,000th game recently?
It's like the worst horror movie Rob Zombie's ever seen. Or the worst album someone shits ever heard. You know what I'm getting at there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh dear. He had, there was another amazing quote from Brucey, which was, we had a Stonewall penalty shout in the fourth minute, which the referee missed. He seemed to blow the whistle, then think, what have I done? And invented a free kick for them instead.
I watched the highlights of this because I knew that there's a chance it would come up because of Bruce's comments. And my God.
Were there any highlights?
They somehow managed to stretch it to 1 minute 50 seconds.
Wow.
By also having some kind of, some like TV kind of VT stuff around it with like little graphics here and there. But I mean, at one point, one of the highlights was a ball into the box that went out for a goal kick. And it's like, it's so bad. And also, the thing that made it super bleak is that like most of the stadium was empty. Yeah. So like it looked a bit like, what's everyone doing it?
Football at the end of the world.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah. It was awful.
It's weird when you get games where nothing happens. The one I always think of is England-Algeria. In 2010.
Yeah,
where
that was bad.
How can nothing happen?
Yeah.
How can events conspire that like a throw-in's like the highlight of the game? It's insane.
And one of the guys, Finn or Charlie or whatever on social media said, when Steve Bruce made those comments, by definition, Steve Bruce has been witness to all of Steve Bruce's games. So, I mean, it's quite a top list.
Yeah.
I'd love Brucey to give us his top 10. That'd be great.
Yeah. What's one of the worst games you've ever seen, Luke?
Well, I always say that the worst game I ever went to was, I saw Portsmouth 0, Gillingham 0. I think New Year's Day 2001, 2002, somewhere like that.
Oh, were you hungover?
Yeah, and it was freezing and it was just absolutely terrible. And another game I can remember, I took my then girlfriend to the first game she's ever been to, which was Alan Perrin's Portsmouth 0, Wigan 2. And it honestly looked like the Portsmouth team had never played football before. And she was like, are they supposed to be doing
it? Did she break up with you after that?
She didn't, but she would be well within her rights to do so. But she had nothing to base it on, and she could see that the players playing for the team I supported, who were professionals, were like, they shouldn't be doing this. That's how bad it was.
So this isn't how this sport works.
But there's been loads over the years. Yeah. Loads
I mean,
years.
I could pick either of the Brighton-Norwich games from this season. Yeah. They were both 0-0. If you can't score against Norwich...
That Norwich
bad
handball
times.
Was fun though, wasn't it?
It was fun.
What was that about?
Really odd.
Again, that's sort of like, are they supposed to be doing this? Is that, even to a non-football fan, you go, surely that's not.
I like that last night we all made the decision that we weren't going to do the Brighton game today.
We've spoken about it about five times. Yeah. Let's talk Man United-Leicester. That one ended a 1-1 draw. Ian Acho and Fred on the score sheet for both sides. Look, it was a bit of an odd game, this one, actually. Do you think Manchester United got away with it? Do you think that...
Massively.
That Leicester goal that was disallowed for that foul, and I'm putting foul in inverted commas, should it have stood?
Well, I know that no one wants to talk about VAR forever, but that was a ridiculous decision.
I agree.
An absolutely ridiculous decision. And a lot of people were saying that would that have happened if it wasn't at Old Trafford? I don't know. That's a bit of conspiracy. That's a bit Tim Four hat for me. But again, it was another example of how just... not fit for purpose this whole system is. There's no way you should be disallowing a goal for that. And I think Leicester have every right to feel very, very aggrieved. And James Maddison said it after, and he said, look, you know, as soon as he goes to the monitor, you know they're going to find some reason to disallow it, which is him talking through his hat a little bit. But I mean, I thought their United very, very much got away with one there.
Mm. No out-and-out target man to aim for as well. So no Cavani, no Ronaldo, Rashford sat on the bench. It was all just a bit odd. Yeah. What did you think of the lineup?
It's a funny one with Rashford, isn't it? In particular, you would think that would be a really good opportunity to give him a start, help him play his way back into form and into confidence, because he's not going to do that in training, is he? He needs some game time. So it's really interesting to make that decision. But I think there's been a lot of talk about sort of the lineup and what the best lineup is for Man United. But Rangnick's remit was to steady the ship, right? And it's been a bit harder than expected. And I think the issue might just be that essentially, no midfield combination they have works to the level they need it to. Whatever they try is dysfunctional in some way. They're all slightly different and it doesn't quite click. And it's such a key area of the pitch that I think he's going to be shuffling this around for the rest of the season and they'll probably not find something that does what they need.
I think if I'm Marcus Rashford, I'm smashing his door down today saying, look, you know, I'm a fit striker. And you've got me on the bench, which basically means if someone goes down injured in the first minute, you could, in theory, play me for the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I'm not starting.
Mm.
And you're playing without a recognised striker. Now, and no one can tell me this is the same as Man City playing without a recognised striker, where it's well-drilled system where everyone knows what they're doing and everyone kind of slots in and does their job. This is a very dysfunctional Man United team. And you can tell it is because he changes the team around all the time. So he doesn't know what team he wants to play with. Look at West Ham, for example. They use about... they seem to only use about 14 players in total ever.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet, Man United don't really know what they're doing. To me, their results have been better than what everyone has them down in terms of reputation, because they've got so many good players. They're very lucky to get away one against Leicester, I thought. I don't know how you solve their problems. We talk about it all the time. Their problems just seem to be huge, and I don't know if it's going to be changed really by bringing in a new coach, because they've tried that 15 times already.
The players have had a lot of criticism as well, but I think, to be fair, a lot of them have quite big futures at Everton.
Stop it, Jim.
You know, in the Championship.
You know what, I did think it was a much better Leicester performance. I think we're starting to see a few signs of improvement. They've got players coming back from injury as well. A shame to not have Jamie Vardy available for the game, but I thought Iheanacho did well.
Yeah.
And I think that we're starting to see them play with a bit more confidence now, and actually, I don't know, they just look like they've got a bit more of a spring in their step, which was nice to see, because it's been quite difficult watching Leicester games this season.
It has, yeah.
There's been a real lack of consistency in
their starting. Fofana's back as well, by the way.
Exactly, yeah. And all of these can only just give them a bit of a lift.
It's the lack of confidence, isn't it, is what's been so unusual about them this season, because you know when you play Leicester, you expect they will come at you. Mm. They're not going to make things easy. They're not going to submit to whatever game plan you're trying to impose on them. And that has kind of softened a little bit. And I think it is a personnel thing.
Mm.
But at the same time, there have been positives from that. Like Dewsbury Hall looks a really, really good player.
He does, yeah.
And he's got a lot more game time than he might otherwise have done,
yeah.
As far as I understand it anyway. And yeah, I think, as you say, Fofana's been a big miss. He was a huge player for them last season. Maybe because he's young, we're kind of...
Well, him and Evans, if him and Evans are ever present all season, I don't think you can say Leicester have been in the position they're in.
No.
I mean, I know they're a good load of points behind Wolves, but they've got three games in hand on them.
Yeah.
You think they would be doing a lot better. And Roger said that himself, I think. I think he said, look, you know, you have to understand, when you lose a centre-back partnership that you rely upon, it matters a lot more than just in those two positions, because it gives you a real platform. And I think they've been a bit unlucky with personnel. And that's also been the reason why they've conceded so many kind of set-piece goals and that kind of thing. So... Yeah, I thought they were very unlucky not to win against United at Old Trafford, and that probably tells its own story.
Mm, and they can focus as well on winning Europa Conference League now, which is kind of ironic, because earlier on in the season, I think there are a few comments about not wanting to be in that competition, but now it looks like it could be one of their best opportunities for securing some European football for next season. Just a bit of sad news to bring you as well. We heard last night that the former Manchester United manager, Louis van Gaal, announced on Dutch TV that he's been battling an aggressive form of prostate cancer. So we wish him all the best.
Yeah.
It's obviously a very tough time for him and his family, and he's been receiving treatment for quite some time. And apparently the players who he's been managing recently didn't know about it. So he's kept this very quiet. And look, everyone here at Football Ramble wishes him all the best, and fingers crossed for a full recovery as well. Let's talk Old Firm. That's probably the last game we've got a bit of time for, where Celtic came out on top, beating Rangers by 2-1. It means Celtic are 6 points clear with a win at Ibrox.
Massive.
I mean, it is absolutely huge. I actually, I went out to the pub for lunch yesterday, so I was getting ready while this game was on, and I had my telly on quite loud, and I was upstairs. And it honestly, I kept having to stop because I kept thinking, is that another goal?
Yeah.
That's how loud that Ibrox crowd were. It's almost like every single time either side attacked, you just heard this absolute roar from the crowd. I had to keep stopping going, was that another goal? Was that another goal? It was electric.
Is it fair to say sometimes those fans take it a bit too far as well?
Yes.
Yeah, isn't
just
it?
A bit. Yeah. Just a bit.
The game had to be stopped at one point. The game was delayed, wasn't it?
It was delayed for the second half, yeah.
I mean, we've seen a lot of... I don't want to immediately focus on the negative. It was a really interesting game because Rangers scored so early.
Mm.
Rangers played in a way that I think people who watch Scottish football a lot more than I do were surprised by.
Mm.
I think maybe people expected Rangers to kind of keep it tight and see if they could nick something. I suppose it's hard to do that at home in an Old Firm game, but Celtic, you know, obviously were caught out early but then bounced straight back. Look, it was a great game. The atmosphere always comes across brilliantly. For me, it's hard not to talk about the negative stuff. We've seen a lot of incidents from crowds, not by any means just at Old Firm games this season, where people have thrown things at managers, thrown things at players. It's not unusual now to see a player celebrating a goal in the corner and having shit thrown at them.
Mm.
So that was disappointing to see. But for me now, I mean, for I'm sure all of us, Celtic going 6 points clear with so few games left, it's difficult to see them dropping enough points for Rangers to defend their title now.
It does feel like both Rangers and Celtic are in the ascendancy, though, doesn't it? It seems like an exciting time for both of them. I was going to say Scottish football, really, but I'm sure the rest of them don't give a shit about how good Rangers and Celtic
feel. Rangers got a big game midweek, of course.
Well, exactly, and you know, Celtic are really doing very, very well under old Ange, and with... A friend of mine is a Celtic fan, and he said Furuhashi has excited him like no one since Henrik Larsson, which might be like, could be, you know, a bit of just, you know, the wind in their sails and stuff. But, you know, it all sounds positive from both sides of the divide.
Absolutely. What a result that was for Celtic, though. And as you say, Ange Postecoglou, I think he's surpassed maybe what the Celtic fans expected, because there was, when he, you know, took over in the summer, I think there was a bit of apprehension about what he could bring and how he could actually turn things around at Celtic. And they needed a big overhaul and a big turnaround, and he's done exactly that. They've been absolutely brilliant.
The turnaround in terms of point difference is ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. They've done an incredible job he's done there.
Yeah, worth pointing out as well that Rangers didn't have Morelos for the game, so without their goal scorer. So that was a big loss for them. But look, whenever you talk about the Old Firm and you talk about these games, whoever comes out on top, it's an incredible scalp, and you know what it means to those fans as well. Tonight, Jim, your boys are in action.
Yep.
Up against Pat and his Crystal Palace side. What do you think is going to happen? Because every point counts now when you're in this fight for the Champions League.
It's massive, isn't it? It's really, really important that Arsenal get something from this. It's a really annoying place to go in those set of circumstances, because as we know, Palace are tough at home and at night as well. A night game on a Monday, I feel like they're going to be extra up for it. I think Patrick Vieira is doing a really, really good job there. I hope he remembers everything Arsenal did for him and puts his sporting integrity to one side.
Do you know that Vieira is actually French for butcher?
Is it?
Yeah.
Checks out, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, checks out. By the way, I just realised we haven't talked about the title race. Does anyone want to say anything about Liverpool and Man City?
Same as it has been for four years.
They both won 2-0 at the weekend. Liverpool went top for a bit. Man City then went back top after they won at 3 o'clock. Next game's massive, isn't it?
Always.
Next Sunday.
Yeah. Them playing each other is absolutely massive.
Where are you going to watch it? It's at the Etihad. So
that joke was a Pat Butcher joke.
Was it? What was the joke?
Pat Butcher.
I know who Pat Butcher is.
Yeah. I completely missed that. I took that at complete face value.
Patrick Vieira. I said Vieira's French for butcher.
Oh.
Because you kept calling him Pat.
Got ya.
Doesn't matter. Probably cut that out, Charlie.
Waste
of time.
Straight over our heads.
Fucking absolute washout of a joke. I can't even remember your question. What was your question?
Where are you going to watch the big game between Liverpool and Man City?
I'm actually going to be in Scotland. So I'll watch it on... Yeah,
what are you doing in Scotland?
I'm going away for a weekend. None of your business,
You're a week late for the Old Firm.
You're not invited. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I've got my dates wrong. Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be good, Jim, isn't it?
It is. It is.
I mean, you're not bothered, are you, about the title race?
Nah.
You're bored of it.
Yeah. Board of the same one for 4 years in a row. Yeah.
Oh, they're two very special teams, though.
They are. Yeah, I'm not really bored of it because the quality's so high.
Right, that's all we got time for. Thanks for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. We'll see you next time.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
You know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes. I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.